This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on. Yeah.
Okay, shoot, they waiting on us then. Hey,
that's a first.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that out loud.
Here we are back with another episode of Cut to It Podcast. What's going on, Steve?
Hello, how are you, David?
First off, don't be giving my government a name.
That's your name, punk.
But I ain't asked you to reveal it.
Again, there you go with
dang,
the,
I
you
mean,
go
I don't
with
call
that
you,
word,
I don't,
axe.
I don't call you Stevon.
I almost called you.
See.
Almost said it with the hard R.
Wait a minute. Dump button.
Stevon. If you're gonna say my birth name, say it right.
Stevon. Yes. I don't drop Smith yours. Senior. I ain't asked you to tell my whole name. So
no, I'm just if you're gonna say my whole name, say it right. Almost again, hard R. Almost said it. Stevon Smith Senior.
Now that we got that out the way,
David.
Man. Okay, sir.
Gerard.
This is like an episode of Jim Rohn right now.
The question is, who's Jim and who's Chris?
You tell me.
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I like that. All right.
Anywho. Man, I've been able to watch you on Thursday nights. You're always doing a great job as usual.
I think that. Why do I sense a little bit of a glad hand in you? Sleight of hand, you over here.
And do I look like David Blaine? I'm not sleight of hand. Since when am I a magician? Yeah. Can I give you your flowers while you can still smell
them?
Dang.
I'm not buying it.
You a tough one to please today. Trying to give
pessimistic
you
pessimistic Paul.
Understatement. So, watching you on Thursday nights, doing a great job as usual. Question.
Thank
for
you, sir.
Question for you. Is there a comparison you have between live TV and game day?
That's a good question. I mean, no. Preparation is still preparation. Mm-hmm. It's slightly different, obviously. You get a paper cut on TV. You can get your leg broken on game day. Slight difference, right?
A little bit.
You got a, Disney Band-Aid, anesthesia, and surgery, right? So it's a huge difference. With the injuries, but it's still preparation. A lot of watching film. Sometimes too much film. I can also watch. I can get inundated with so much film and numbers and facts that you start to lose the perspective, and then your mind is going faster than
your
mind's
mouth. Just racing. You're trying to process.
You're trying to process, and you get numbers and start to put names together with the wrong teams and numbers with this and .7 and point this. You know, a great example is talking about Tom Brady last couple of weeks and talking about what's going on with him in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I said that one of the things that he's had to do, which is he's done for the last 15-plus years, is in New England, his philosophy was look short first and allow the deep passes to develop as an outlet, which is totally different. But that's Tom Brady. That's why he's the GOAT.
That's true.
But now he's in Tampa Bay, and Bruce Arians' kind of offense is look deep first, short second. And just to give you this illustration is Tom Brady's last year in 2019 for the New England Patriots. I believe it was roughly 4,153 yards per attempt. I don't have the – I can look at my phone and tell you, but yards per attempt is an average of 6.7 or 6.6 yards per attempt.
Okay.
Last year under Jameis Winston, Bruce Arians' offense with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 2019 – 5,100 and something yards, so a little bit below 5,200 yards. Average yards per attempt, 8.6.
Okay.
Huge difference, right? Just to kind of show it. Now in 2020, Tampa Bay Buccaneers under under Tom Brady. Right now, 7.4 yards per attempt. Still below, right? But under pressure, Tom Brady is averaging, I believe, a little bit above 5 yards per attempt. Under pressure, barely 7%, 0.7 yards per attempt. So obviously, not being pressured, not having, you know, looking down there, you can stare things down, let long developing plays. So basically, those are some of the things that I experience and deal with in the TV world. Now, as a football player, hey, bro, they running this coverage. I don't care if they blitz and throw me the ball.
Right.
That's the difference in game day. In playing football, you allow the numbers to give you an understanding of what plays to run. In TV, the numbers give you an understanding of why a team is good, indifferent, or can't get out of their own way.
So you gave me a good correlation between game day and live TV. Has there ever been a time when you're on live TV where maybe you had an instance where you kind of wanted that playback, where maybe you made a mistake and you kind of wanted that playback?
Man, live TV sucks because sometimes you just get stuck, or you go over on a segment, you have a good point, and you have to skip over that segment because now we don't have that time. So generally, an hour show is really only 47, 46 minutes of content because you have commercials. You got to pay for the advertisement. So, but there's also been some times on live TV, brother been on that struggle bus.
Yeah, the struggle moment.
Listen, sometimes you're having a bad day. But
through the magic of, I can't say the magic of television, through the magic of podcasting, we've got a clip queued up, I guess potentially you want to have back. Let's see if we can get our production folks to run that back.
I hope the production folks.
Because they haven't been the greatest of franchise since, obviously, I can't even speak right now.
Marino.
The Marino at the end is what does it for me.
I was stuck.
It was late that night, though. I'm going to shoot you some bail. It was late that night. That was like, 1 o'clock in the morning? Yeah. It seemed like it was really late.
It doesn't matter. I was stuck.
I get it. I mean, you...
Bro, do you know for about...
You punched Dan Marino's name.
Dan Marino.
Yeah.
I can say
it. Now you got it down.
Now. I got it now.
Like, I ain't.
Bro, here's the sad part.
It ain't been that bad since Ace Ventura. Just laugh.
I can't. Bro, jeez. Like, 2 days... I was still jacked up 2 days after that.
I bet.
I was like...
But I'm just, it's when you want back, though, right?
Want back?
Yeah.
Bro, I didn't cry.
But you run it back. You run that playback.
Man,
right.
I run it back in my mind. Just
like you had a drop pass. Like, I mean, being an athlete, I get it. Like, man, I wish I had that one.
You just screwed up my day, dog.
Lucky for you, we at the end of the day. Recording this. Are you good?
Hard R again. Hard R again.
Enough with this dialect.
But seriously, it was. I was jacked up for about 2 days. I was gosh, I screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You got more positives than you got.
Yeah, whatever,
like that, man. So
hey,
damn.
This
tough crowd.
Yeah. Hey, who we got next?
All right, coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Colleen Wolf, a host for NFL Network, who works Thursday Night Football, a number of NFL Network shows, a native of Philly, and just all-around friend of the podcast. Colleen Wolf on Cut to It podcast. All right, so our first segment, Colleen, is called Get Iced Up. They're random icebreaker questions. They're selected at random by Smitty, so you know how he is. Don't know what's coming. Don't know if he has a follow-up. And we got some creative stuff for you this time. So, Smitty, go ahead and give Colleen the first one.
Buckle up, buttercup. Here it goes.
I'm ready? Nervous. Oh, my God. All right.
Not be nervous. But just maybe towards the end, though. Right now, you're all right.
All right. If you had the power to shrink anything and take it with you, what would it be and why?
It would be just one thing.
Yes, one thing.
All right. Can I reanimate it after I get to where I go?
How do you reanimate it?
Like, if you shrink something and then can I unshrink it after I get to wherever I'm going?
Judges, what do our judges say? You're good.
You thumbs up. Ding 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 ding.
Okay, cool. I'm putting John in my pocket.
That was really that
all that for this.
That was really inappropriate for John.
Yeah, I know. Well, then I was like, I was gonna say my dogs, but then if I bring my dogs and not John, then that's a thing. And so I wanted to make sure I could unshrink John after I shrink him. So yeah, that's the answer.
Okay. I will text John after to let him know he's getting shrunk and playing in your pocket. And John is her husband, everyone. Correct. So relax.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What is your favorite Christmas present you've ever received?
Ooh, I got a couple years ago, there was this picture at NFL Films of, I think it's Betty Grable, when she was like a young actress with a leather football helmet on and a football, and it's like this glam shot. And I saw it at NFL Films and I fell in love with it. And somehow John figured out like where to get it and surprised me with it. And I love it. And I have it framed in my office.
That's crazy. Cool. I just got an email about, did we steal any photos? Out of
Yes, I think John definitely cased the place.
That's really cool. That's great of John. John's a good dude, man.
He's pretty cool.
I know. He does all of his homework.
Yeah, he does. Have you seen the show Naked and Afraid?
No, it sounds terrible.
Okay, it's on Discovery.
Discovery Channel, yeah.
Discovery Channel. It's actually a great show. So we're going to kind of play that, but it's called Clothed and Afraid.
Okay.
Okay?
Because we have morals.
Yes.
Right.
You can only have 3 items to bring with you to an uninhabited place. What are your 3 items? And before you answer, would you like me to tell you what mine are to kind of help you? Because you don't seem like you watch the show, so it's...
you need...
All right, yeah. Start me off here.
Naked and Afraid is basically they take people and they disrobe, they don't have any clothes, and then they give them survival kick, and they like...
You get one item.
You get one or two items, yeah. And that's it. So mine is, my list is, I get a fire starter, a tent, and a huge knife / machete.
Oh, okay. Those are good.
Now you cannot use any of those 3. Go.
Oh my God, a knife. A knife is a great idea. All right, fine. I'm going to go.
You can't use the knife though. Because
what?
Now.
Okay, fine.
You can't because.
Can she have anything that has a sharp edge?
Just yes, you can. Okay, just right. Not a knife or a machete.
Okay.
Because that's mine. We're not sharing.
Okay, a box cutter.
Okay, box cutter. All right.
I don't know how many boxes are going to be at an uninhibited island. But.
Listen, you're on an island by yourself. Who knows?
I don't know. Yeah, all right, fine. Box cutter, I'm going to go with that. How about matches? Is that too close to fire starter?
No, that's a match.
Okay.
The rain, you're screwed. Anyway.
The key is going to be the Kindle or whatever for both of y'all. But that's, you got to watch the show.
And I'm bringing a raft with rows attached to it so I can get the hell out of there.
She's so dead.
So I'm sunburned. Everybody. I'm like,
yeah, because they're not prepared.
So you are?
It doesn't matter. I'm get to ask the questions. Listen, I get to win. I get to win either way.
I'm taking away the box cutter and I'm replacing it with a spear.
There we go.
Yeah.
She's just.
But now you got to have aim.
Hey, she just. Earn herself 3 extra days of life right there. Bang!
Yeah, her rate went up to like a 6.8.
Yep, because she's going to die. Like she can't drink salt water. Yeah, she has no pot to cook it in.
Mm-mm. So all that stuff you learn when you're watching that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I was watching Castaway the other day, so can I just get some moisture from coconuts?
Yes, because you'll be because you will never see anybody, but yet she's tanning.
Right, exactly. I'm gonna need some tanning oil and a volleyball for a friend. Okay.
All right, a few more. When was the last time you gotten pulled over for speeding?
I've never gotten pulled over for speeding, but I have gotten pulled over for not putting my turn signal on early enough to change lanes in the middle of the night when I was going to a radio station job that I had, and it was very, very shady.
Mm, yeah. You were in Philly, huh?
Yeah. But like, how is that even a thing? There was nobody on the road, dead of night, and I got pulled over for not turning on my turn signal because quick enough.
Because
right, or early enough. Yeah.
You were in Philly, correct? And you were probably in a sketch neighborhood, right?
A little bit.
Okay, you are not African American.
But my windows were tinted.
So they thought you were trying to get dope. That's what it was. That was, yeah. She was trying to score. This is where the Philly comes out of her. Cardi B or Megan Thee Stallion?
You know, I feel like my allegiances have wavered. And I really, really love Megan Thee Stallion. Like, I love her. Yeah. And I don't know what's going on with Cardi and Offset lately. I haven't been, like, too into the drama. But, you know, I did listen to a couple Cardi songs yesterday. But when I was listening to WAP, I was really into the Megan Thee Stallion part.
I don't know that I'm qualified to talk about WAP.
I'm not
know.
Even I'm, going there.
Yeah, I'm not qualified. Yep.
All right, let's get down to who Colleen is. What is she made of? What makes her tick? So here we go. Where are you from and a place you call your hometown?
Well, shoot, that's Philly. Now, I grew up outside of Philly, like 45 minutes outside, but went to school in Philly, have a house in Philly still. Philly is my city. I love everything about it. The good, the bad, all of it. It's such an awesome place. And the people are so very real there. They will tell you exactly what they're thinking immediately. And they're all lunatics and mostly related to me.
So how did your hometown impact and shape your perspective on how you see the world today?
Well, I think Philly is really kind of, it's a rough around the edges kind of city. It's very blue collar. It's very hardworking. And that was something that was like instilled in me from the minute I was able to get a job. I got a job and I was working, and I was working multiple jobs at any time. Like usually I had three jobs at a time. And then that stopped when I went to college and I just had one job. But it was, you know, it's a city where everybody really, really has to scrap to get ahead and for everything that they want. And I think that has like really shaped the way that I kind of look at things. I over-prepare for every single assignment, no matter what the heck it is. And that is just something like my work ethic was built, I think, from Philly.
It's funny as you over-prepare, but you also worry yourself so much.
Yeah.
And you think that is obviously it is a great quality of you, but how do you handle relaxing?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And I think a lot of the worrying and the sort of anxiety that I get around work is because I just don't want to, like, I'm so competitive and I'm so competitive with myself. And I don't want to let anybody down that's like with me, that like, so any, I don't want to ever be the weakest link basically on any of these shows. I just want us to, you know, do as best we can. And so like, I feel like I spend so much time preparing and worrying. And then once the show starts, I can actually relax. And then once the show is finished, I can really relax. And that is like my sweet spot, basically, when everything is done and I get through it and we do it and it's good and it's great. Then I can just chill. Mm-hmm. And then I can just kind of like coast, have a beer, like watch a show and just zone out.
I can relate to that, because it's also you have the internal standard too, right? Like you don't want to let nobody down, and I definitely feel that, but it's, you also don't want to let yourself down.
Right. Yeah. And like anytime that, you know, you've been in a spot where you realize, oh my God, like I should have known that. I should have prepared for that. That sort of, I think, changes you a little bit. And, you know, I think for me, what I need to do is sort of like dial it back sometimes, but it's just like so programmed within me that's just part of my fabric.
So growing up, how did you believe that the world worked?
God, I didn't know anything when I was growing up about the world. I was like oblivious to a lot of things. I was very much in a bubble growing up. And I don't think I realized a lot of things until I went to college and moved into the city and met different people that grew up in different circumstances and heard their stories. And it all really started to click and hit me. And I think kind of looking back on that now, I realize how isolated I was growing up and how much I didn't know and how much I've really changed and grown as a person since then.
How can you say you are isolated, but yet when you look at Philly, like here in Philly, which is, Philly is Pennsylvania, then you got New Jersey, which kind of like Charlotte, which is depending on which route you take, you could be in Philly or be in New Jersey with a few left turns and about a mile each way. So how could you really be isolated in such a city that has so much diversity?
I know it's interesting because you can get to like a ton of different states in no time in the Northeast. But where I grew up in a suburb that was like mostly white. And it was, I feel like the suburbs around Philly are pretty isolated and within their own bubbles. And even when I go back home now and I see all of my friends who haven't left and I talk to them and I hear some of the things they say, it hits a lot different now. It changed my worldview when I went to college and met a lot of different people from different backgrounds. And it was an amazing experience and it was life-changing.
We have to take a break. And more than anything, we gotta pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
What did you daydream about when you were in high school?
Well, when I was in high school, I was a figure skater. So wow.
See, I got it out of her. I knew I could get it.
Yeah, that was it. Anyway,
she doesn't like to talk about
Nancy,
it.
Nancy Kerrigan swag.
Nah.
Yo, I was more of like a Tonya Harding gal. Oh.
I threw the alley.
Dude.
No, yeah, I started skating when I was like 6 years old and I loved it and I got really good at it. And so I skated before school. Like I would get up at 4 a.m. and go to the rink and turn the lights on. And like, it was great because if you were the first one at the rink, then you could choose the music. And that meant like TLC was on.
Can you imagine this little skinny little girl ice skating to TLC.
To Red Light Special.
Red Light Special.
And
4 a.m.
Right.
In Philly.
I'd be so confused. Yeah. What is going
on? And like, mind you, I like cut all my hair off too. So I was like, I had this like short pixie cut. And my coaches were like, you are way too much of a tomboy. So they sent me to ballet classes because they were like, you need to learn how to be graceful. So they were like, you have the athleticism, you can land these jumps, like you have all of, like the power, because I was all legs when I was skating. Like all I wanted to do was skate faster than everybody, jump higher, spin better. Just like, I mean, I was fueled by anybody else that was on the ice. I was gonna outskate them. And then my coaches were like, yeah, all that's great, but your like presentation sucks. So they were like, here's a bunch of dresses. And of course, like that triggered me because I was like, why do I have to wear dresses? And they sent me to a ballet teacher. And I had to take all these like serious ballet classes for years. And it ended up, I guess I got more graceful, who knows. But when I was in high school, that's all I thought about. Like, I would skate before school, after school, competitions. Like, I didn't take gym class because I got credits for going ice skating. Yeah, I was really in it.
Did you enjoy any other sports?
I ran track for a little bit my freshman year of high school, but then it was kind of in conflict with skating, and my parents were spending a lot of money. I had a choreographer at one point. Like, it was so, I mean, it's ridiculous when you look back on it, but like, the price of skates, you have to get them custom made. You have to buy the boot and the blade separately. You have to take them to special places to get sharpened. I mean, it is a lot. And my parents would take me at 4 o'clock in the morning and sit at the rink in the freezing cold and just watch me skate around.
So, all right, let's skip over that part. That's too much, dog.
I know. I was very intense. Anything that I do, I just lock in.
Let's talk about your TV career, because a lot of people, like, I get the opportunity to work.
I was gonna say, I don't know that everyone knows that you guys are co-workers on NFL Network.
Yeah, so we're co-workers. This is Colleen Wolf. She's the host of NFL Network.
You guys are together on Thursday Night Football.
Rising star. She can host anything. Mm-hmm. She loves sports. She knows about sports. But you didn't always have the confidence that you appear that you have the confidence now. And see, I use that keyword, appear. She does a lot of internal dialogue that we're going to get into later. But how did you get your shot in broadcasting? And when I say broadcasting, I'm not talking about TV. I'm just talking about in the
business.
Of broadcasting.
Well, this was like something that I had no idea I even wanted to do. This was not like, oh my God, I want to grow up and be on TV. Like, that was not really the thing. Like, I was going to go to art school.
You want to go to art? Yeah, I was going to say, what was it then?
Yeah, I was like, so in confused. High school, I was into figure skating and art. I was really cool.
And she wears contacts, so I'm pretty sure she had glasses.
I'll wear contacts.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying she said she was really cool. Art. And ice skating. So I'm like, you know, she's super smart. So I'm just throwing it out there. She makes being intelligent cool.
Oh, gotcha.
Well, thank you. Look, listen, nerds run the world. So I loved art, and I was like, okay, I applied to all art schools. I was going to go to school for either illustration, graphic design, or art education. And then, like, last minute, I decided to go to Drexel in Philly, and I had an applied to their art school directly. So they were like, okay, you can't take any art classes this year. Just do something, you know, as take all of your electives this year, reapply, and then you can start your art program next year. So they were like, just take something like communications. So I was like, okay, great. And I was like, this is really easy and kind of fun. At Drexel, you go to school for 6 months and then you work for 6 months, and you do that three times. So you get to have three internships, like three co-ops. And so when it came time for me to do my first one, because I stuck with communications, I was like, this is pretty great. I'll just, you know, do some art stuff on the side. So it came time to do my first co-op, and through Drexel, all they really offered were really lame ones, like, you know, working in pharmaceutical marketing spots, and maybe you can get a job at like QVC or, you know, Home Shopping Network. And I was like, all right, I don't really want to do that. But my dad doesn't really follow sports, has never really been a big sports fan. But he was friends with one of the women that was on a sports talk radio show in Philly, in the morning. And so I got an internship there just randomly. I was like, that sounds like a fun thing to do when you're in college, work at a radio station. Mm-hmm. So I went and I walked in, and my first day I saw these four people that were on the morning show and their chemistry that they had together. They were having so much fun. They were talking about sports. They were like ripping on each other, and it was such a great atmosphere. And I was like, this is exactly what I want to do. How do I do this? What is the course?
It was Thursday Night
That's
Football.
What it sounds like, for real.
Exactly.
We're getting molded for it.
Yeah. How it started, how it's going. Exactly. Like
you had a meme and you didn't even know it. So
I know.
It sounds like you fell in love with maybe the atmosphere, but you largely, it sounds like you didn't have the most interest in team sports. It was, you fell in love with that atmosphere being at that sports station.
I loved the atmosphere and I was competitive, but I hadn't like unlocked that yet in terms of like other team sports. Like I played softball growing up. And like I said, I tried to run track for a little bit, but that's not like a team sport. And it wasn't until when I was in high school and the Sixers were in the playoffs with Iverson and like Dikembe Mutombo and Eric Snow. And randomly I stumbled upon one of the games and I was like, I started watching the game and I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting.
She was channel surfing and said, oh, what is that big guy waving his finger saying, oh, no, no, no.
Exactly. And I was like, oh my God, wait a second. And I started listening to the announcers and it was like in the middle of the series and I'm watching and I had no idea what was going on, but I was so intrigued by it. And
so living in a bubble in Philly.
My family was not into sports. Like we did not, it was not a house where there was football on Sundays. Like it just, that wasn't how I grew up, which is wild now that I think about it. I every time I go like, you know, on Thanksgiving or like, yeah, on Thanksgiving, I'll go home and I'll be like, you know, why isn't the TV on? There are games happening. What are we doing here? Like everybody get it together. So when I started watching, you know, more games and getting into more sports, and once I started working at the radio station, I was like, oh my God, I gotta really like figure this out. So this is like super embarrassing. I went out and I got basketball for dummies, football for dummies, baseball for dummies, hockey for dummies, and I read all four books and took notes. And I every single day would read the sports section on like philly.com, which was like the Philadelphia Daily News and Philadelphia Inquirer. And I just like little by little, I would watch the games and I started and listen to sports talk radio station all the time. Once again, I just like locked in and became obsessed with trying to figure it out and obsessed with kind of like winning almost at it. And it's like, how do I become the best at this? And I just, it was ridiculous. Like I was in college and I was doing this internship where I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and do the morning show. And, you know, thinking back on it now, it's like, it was almost like it replaced figure skating for me. It was something I needed and I latched onto it just like I did skating. And I made it every part of my life. And then I just, from there, as I started to understand it more and more and talk to more people about it and ask questions and learn and listen, I started to finally kind of break in and I got a lot of jobs behind the scenes. And then that sort of led to the stuff on camera.
What were some of your duties in the beginning that you had to do?
Oh my God. Like, you know, you're getting coffee for people. I remember, so Hugh Douglas was on the show a couple days a week. And he was like in the building where the studio was, there was in the garage, like a car wash on one of the levels. Uh-oh. And he was like, hey, can you take these, like during one of the breaks, hey, can you take this down to the guys for my car? And I was like, sure, no problem. And like, I thought he meant like drive his car down. And it was a Bentley. And I don't even know if he knows the story. I got in it and I was freaking out. Like it didn't occur to me that I could just like drop the keys off to the guys down there and they would like drive it down. And I get in and I was like, oh my God, how do I work this machine? What is this? And it was so, and I remember like doing the turns in the parking garage to like get down to the next level. And I was sweating so much. And I remember the steering wheel just being so heavy. Like it was so hard to turn because I always had total piece of crap cars growing up.
That ain't a key.
I got back like 45 minutes later and everybody was like, where the hell have you been? Like in the beginning, when I first latched on to that morning show, they would have me go out and do ridiculous bits and then call into the station with it. So one of the ones I remember the most is when T.O. was having his contract dispute when he was in Philadelphia, they had me go to the city corner. It was at 5th and Market. So it's like a busy intersection in Philly. And this was when T.O. was like, I don't have enough money to feed my family. And so they had me set up this giant, they like brought down this big giant plastic kind of container. And I set up a collection for T.O. and I had a like Salvation Army bell. I wore a sandwich board. I had like a megaphone. And I basically, people were coming by all morning long. They were throwing their lunches in. They were throwing like pens in for him to sign a new contract. Somebody threw some type of like lubricant in there for him. There was a lot of really interesting things that ended up popping up in the collection for T.O.
I've been an intern before, but I ain't never, ever had to do no stuff like that.
That is, wow. I think that's worse than the, I always use this as an example. It's probably bad, but man, it's my podcast. Who cares? So around tax season.
Oh, the Liberty people.
Yeah. When they got the Statue of Liberty guy, who generally looks the same complexion as me sometimes. Right? Oh, no.
It varies on where the Liberty tax place is.
It does.
It varies.
Yeah, it varies. And I always, when we drive by, I look at my kids, I say, you don't pay attention to school, that's what your ass is going to be doing right there.
Now, were you getting paid? Were you getting paid, or was this for college credit?
So for me, it was, no, my God, none of the internships I had were paid. So
that's
all unpaid work.
The kicker is, the Liberty Tax guy gets paid. Like, when you are unpaid, because I worked for the Charlotte Hornets. I was an unpaid intern. So they have you do all that crap. You got to go get coffee for somebody. You got to run stats. You got to go run stats to the coaching staff. But what she's having to do, like having to get embarrassed.
Listen, woo. I mean.
Colin, but it's worth it. Too.
Colin, you didn't even know this. G used to work for the Hornets. And his job for a little bit, he would give at halftime the stats. Not to Bernie Bickerstaff. Not to Bickerstaff's son.
JB. Yep.
Not to JB Bickerstaff.
Not to Larry Brown.
Not to Larry Brown. He got to give Michael Jordan the stat sheet. So his life wasn't that.
I was saying, I had nothing like you did.
No. Right. But she was basically dressed up like a Salvation Army kid.
Getting lube thrown at her.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
Bad.
Yeah,
they had me do the most ridiculous stuff, and I was like, "Whatever, I don't care. Like, if we're gonna get a laugh out of it, let's go, let's do it."
But it obviously it puts something in you and ingrained something in you to where you're like, you know what, I want more of this.
Yeah, it became addictive, and I think it's because that adrenaline that you get when you're on the air, when you're doing a show, like for me at that point as a, you know, college kid, I was calling into the radio station, but they were on, you know, I was on the station that, you know, my friends were listening to, and just being in that moment, the rush that you get, it's such a high. And I think that's what I loved so much about it was the high from it. And it was like, it was something that, you know, once you're done the show, it kind of sticks around too. So it's just like a really euphoric feeling. And I love it.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Good, do it. Good, do it. Let's get down, do it. Good, do it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from CutToItPodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's talk ball. And and talking ball, we can talk about football, but also talking really about your area of expertise. And I work with you, and I know how much you grind. So let's get this out of the way, because you know I get on you about this. You are a diehard Eagles fan. So when I say a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan, I want to know what's the dress, what's the food, the why, the what, the when, how. Walk us through it, because I'm on air with you. You can't really let your hair down and be.
You got to be professional. I got to be an unbiased professional.
Like when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, it wasn't a question. It was like, oh, who's going to do it? Who's not going to do it? Can we rein her in? She was at the Super Bowl. Yeah. like her cousin was on a team.
So she was working for the network.
She was over there bopping and dancing to the music. She was in like they had her in the scaffolding, like mm-hmm. like she's at a golf tournament, mm-hmm. right? She's supposed to be whispering. Oh, she loud talking.
Oh yeah. That was so awesome.
She was acting a stone cold fool.
So she is a straight up diehard Eagles fan.
She's supposed to look at all 32 teams. She only loves one team.
A little extra love to one.
Not a little extra. She got two loves. John, her husband, and Philly. Everything else, right. Backseat.
Yeah, but you know what? That also means like they get extra scrutiny too. Like just like, it's like, I love them like my kids. They really don't keep me up at night, which is great. But I will say like, you know, when they also get my ire as well. Like they will, if they're not doing well, they're going to hear it from me. And that just means in my own house when I'm watching the game.
So you and Steve work for NFL Network. I'd love for you to paint the picture. How hard is it working in TV?
It's, you know what, people, because you always have people on Twitter being people on Twitter, and everyone loves to nitpick every single little thing that goes wrong, and nobody truly knows what is happening behind the scenes and how much is just like a tightrope act. And even just for instance, in one of the recent shows we did, at one point, everybody in the entire production lost all capability to hear each other. And that includes like all of the the producers, the directors, me as the host, all of the guys, like nobody could hear anything. And at that point, it's like, what are you supposed to do? So there's a lot of moving parts.
So when something like that happens and things do go left, what do you, for both of y'all, do you have to do?
For the analyst, because Colleen's the host, mm-hmm. and being a host is kind of like being a general manager, which is a general manager in football terms is like being a fireman. You just put out fires. You don't create them. You are just, she's teeing us up. She's
got to be able to pivot.
Like she got to be able to pivot when somebody like me says something that is like, bro, you didn't go over that. Because a lot of times we save. Mm-hmm. We'll save some stuff.
Like I say, you say save, like
when I say
going like, from like what so, you went over in like a pre-production to so what happens.
A lot of times in the pre-production, you don't hear the authentic conversation because
and it's better that way.
Because you get a natural reaction, and then also too, and she knows I've said some stuff at times. She's like, "Ooh, how do we transition?"
Yeah,
and then she'll say something, or like, well, she'll have to finagle it. Where her teleprompter goes out when we're in studio.
Yeah, you know what? It's a lot of, you have to cover up any mistakes that happen. And like a lot of things happen when you're live. Sometimes producers will, like when they hit your button to like get in your IFB, basically, when they, you know, when they talk to you, sometimes that button gets stuck. And then you hear in your ear, the producer yelling to like the director to do this and all of like, and checking in with the reporters and everything else. And you're still trying to complete a sentence and figure out like if it makes sense while hearing all of these other conversations at the same time. And, you know, it's a lot that's happening at once.
It takes a lot of input. It's not just makeup. Lipstick and chapstick. It requires a lot of film watching, yeah. And Colleen writes her own script for a lot of the stuff that she does. So she does a lot of things that a lot of people is just not showing up and look pretty and smile.
Yeah. So what is the biggest misconception of working on TV out of all stuff or even something that you didn't mention?
Go ahead, Colleen.
That's it right there. I mean, that we just show up and all we do is put on makeup and then read off of a teleprompter and just regurgitate stuff that producers tell us in our ear. And like, let me just be clear, there is not somebody that is sitting there feeding us information because they have a lot of stuff that they are doing. And that is like the least of their concerns. They're trying to keep the show on track. And we need to be able to respond like normal human beings and have a conversation and be prepared and know the subject matter and be able to pivot when there is breaking news. And a lot of the times I write scripts, but I don't totally love to be scripted. I like to be off the cuff. I like to ad lib a lot more. And so during quarantine, when we were doing all of the shows from home, like I had so many people tweet me and be like, oh, anybody can just sit there with a teleprompter. And it's like, hey buddy, I don't have one at my house. Like all of this is like off the top of my head. And that requires a lot of work. And I think a lot of times I feel like when I'm preparing for games and shows, I almost feel like I'm back in college again, because it just feels like there is so much work goes into it and I'm studying. And I feel like I never left school, because it changes every couple of days and you have to refresh. And after every game, there's new storylines and you have to get back in. There's never a break during the season. It is a grind and it goes fast, but you gotta keep up, because if you don't, you will just get swallowed alive.
Today, I was on another podcast and I was talking to a female. But one was interesting when I was doing this podcast on women and fashion. The woman said that there's not a lot of mentors or people that she felt comfortable with to be able to kind of seek out help. So what I'm asking you, Colleen, is in the job you're in, how much collaboration do female hosts or female in general working in the sports area rely, support each other on a daily basis?
I think it's changed and it is changing.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
It's changing. So rewind that to, if it's changing, that must mean, obviously you're going to say it's changing for the good. Mm-hmm. Then what was it before you start to paint this rosy picture? Give me the real now.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, there wasn't a ton of us when I first started, and at least like in the places where I worked, you know, if I'm in sports, I might be the only woman sort of in the room a lot of times. So when there was another woman, it wasn't like friendly or cordial a lot of times. It was kind of a competitive type thing. And I think it's sort of set up that way in a lot of instances, because there are so few positions in general, and then so yeah. few positions for women. And you know, when you're competing with the people that you're working with, it kind of creates this really weird dynamic. And as I've been in the business and as I've gotten more comfortable and confident in my position, and I think that just things in the world have changed a little bit more. I think that women in general are becoming more supportive of each other than they were previously. At least I have experienced that. So I think that now it seems like there's more, hey, there's strength in us working together rather than us working against each other. What? And like, look what we can do if we bring all of our supporters, you know, and people that follow us together, and we could create something even better. When I first started, there was very few female mentors. I really didn't have any, but I do remember when I first walked into the Eagles locker room, my first time in a locker room ever, there was one woman in there who, she was awesome, and she worked for one of the newspapers at the time in town, and she pulled me aside and she was like, look, if you're gonna be in here, like, this is what I'll tell you to, like, to help you kind of watch your back. And she was like, told me the different players that are more prickly, told me, like, you know, who I should deal with, like, PR wise, like which guys are going to be less creepy than other guys, and kind of laid the groundwork for me. and kind of helped me steer clear of potential obstacles and pitfalls and stuff. And that meant so much to me, just that one conversation, but there weren't a lot of them.
All right, Carlene, our last segment that we'll wrap up with is called the Deep Three. And so what we'll do is we'll ask you three questions that basically
deep
goes
questions
beyond who you are within your industry, getting to know who Carlene Wolf is. So Smitty, give you the first question.
If you can write a letter to younger Carlene right now, you can go backwards and you can prepare her for this moment. What would you write and why?
I would tell her to relax. I would tell her to stop stressing out about all of these small things because they don't matter. They're not going to matter. There's going to be way bigger things that you're going to have to deal with, and have fun now and live it up and just be yourself. There were so many times when I first started that I was trying to be something because you get told by supervisors and managers and consultants and, you know, everybody is trying to get their opinion in, and they want you to be a certain way. They want you to look a certain way, sound a certain way, talk a certain way, say certain things. And ultimately, you just got to be you. And that is, I mean, I don't know how to be anything else but me. And the more that I was able to get comfortable in my own skin and be comfortable being uncomfortable, then that's when I kind of found success.
Pretty good right there.
Now that you've navigated through your career, how will you make it easier for women coming up underneath you to rise?
Well, I talk to a lot of girls that are, you know, in college now. I get a lot of people that reach out to me on like Twitter and Instagram. And it is a great question because there's no great way to sort of bring people up. Like if I had some type of mentor program, that would be the goal for me, to help other women break in, because normally I take a look at their stuff, their reels, some of their clips, and I give them some notes, and I try and set them up with meetings at different places or agents, things like that, just little things. But ultimately, it is such a fickle business. And the thing that's the most frustrating about this business is it's not a meritocracy. And it's really subjective, and it really depends a lot on right place, right time, who the people in charge are, what they like, and if they like you. And there's so much turnover that happens too, so things change so quickly. And so I think it is a really difficult industry, and I think more than anything else, what women need is just support.
You and John both working in sports world, what impact do you want to have once you two are sitting on the porch with the dogs somewhere for now? How would that conversation go looking back?
Well, I want to be able to look back on everything that I did, and I want to be able to feel like we made people laugh. We made people feel better. Like this, there's so much that's negative, especially right now, I think, in the world, that if we're able to kind of help people at all, just brighten their day even a little bit, I feel like that to me is a huge impact. Like I there have been people that, you know, reach out to me and say that certain things, certain shows have like helped them. I mean, I do another podcast around the NFL at work, and one of the guys right now on it is going through cancer, Chris Wessling. And he's talked very openly about his battle, and the impact that he's had on people listening has just been, you can't even put it into words. And I think if you're able to affect like even one or two people in your life, then you've done your job here.
Carlene talked about how she basically fell into sports media.
Yeah.
you have a much different journey. You played in the NFL for a number of years. How did you end up working now with NFL Network?
Well, I fell into it too. I was approached by a guy named Taylor Zarzer here in Charlotte, North Carolina. He asked me to come in on in the studio WFNZ, and so I started doing that. And I was like, hey, let me take an internship. So trying to work the boards a little bit, and then I was getting on air for like 10 or 15 minutes. Then I started coming in once a month, and he had an agent that he referred me to. So I went with them, talked to him, and then they worked a deal, and I started working for XM Radio NFL Channel.
Yeah.
Did that once a week from like 7 a.m. to 10. And then I was went to Baltimore, and all of a sudden, Mike and Mike asked me to come in. I had a contract with them. I was doing eight appearances on the Monday after a game. So I would fly to Bristol and do the morning show. And then I got some great advice from Sage Steele. She's a female anchor for ESPN. Awesome.
Yeah.
She's cool as a fan. She's much cooler than her big brother Chad Steele with the Baltimore Ravens. But she was like, look, figure out what you want to do if this is what you want to do. And I didn't think this is what I wanted to do, but I was getting opportunities to do it. She says, so this is what you do. Go, and most guys, when they come on, they just really show up for that little segment. She was like, no, don't do that. Tell them you want to be a part of the whole production, or at least observe.
Okay.
So don't go in just for your segment, because if you have a show that's on from 6 a.m. to 11, and you come in at the 8:30, 9 o'clock hour, they've been blowing and going for a long time. Mm-hmm. What time do they show up? What time? What's the process of production meeting? What is this? What is that? And it made so much sense. We ended up being on the phone for about 45 minutes.
Wow.
And she told me what to do, how to do it. And then you know if you are, one, built for this business. Do you want to do it? And I really enjoyed it because it had a process. It had something that coming out of a process-filled job, which is football. You show up on, you play on Sunday, but you show up on Monday. You get some weights or treatment. Tuesday's off. Wednesday, first and second down. Thursday, third down and long and fringe. Friday is red zone. Mm-hmm. Saturday is walkthrough. Sunday is the game, right? And so just not having that process anymore of retirement. So I went through that and interviewed with CBS, NFL. I was actually, you want to hear a dirty secret?
Ooh. Do tell.
Do tell. So I was interviewing with Fox Sports with Undisputed and all that stuff. So I was interviewing with them. But I had a lunch hour and a half that we slid into a restaurant down in, down in I think it was Hollywood area or Culver City area, and had lunch with the hiring guys with NFL Network.
Oh, so you was a highly contested free agent.
But later I had dinner with Fox Sports, but I was doing an interview with Fox Sports who was offering me, and then I had an interview with NFL Network, and they interviewed me, but I ended up interviewing them.
Okay.
And so what got me the job was, they said, hey, what do you think? I said, well, I notice you guys don't have a presence on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Let me be your presence on the East Coast.
Oh.
I'm not going to come to L.A.
Right.
On a consistent basis. But what I will do is every major event, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Combine, want it. Training camp, I'll do it. Super Bowl, there. Enter sit-down interviews, but I'm not coming to L.A. on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that Sunday show. Because I got a family, blah, blah, blah. I said, really? Next thing you know, had dinner. The crazy part is Fox Sports paid for my flight.
Ooh.
Paid for my hotel.
You dirty dog.
And basically got me the job. with NFL Network. Now, I interviewed with Fox as well. They wanted me to do the other show that Sunday morning, but again, that's LA. But yeah, it was cool. And interview with ESPN a little bit, but they had some things going on internally. They were shaping and changing up, and they were trying to figure out. They didn't really have a place for me, so that didn't work out. And that's how I got with NFL Network. That's how I got. That's how I got the job. I got some great advice from family friend, and that's how I got my job. So it was really started at a local radio station, and man, moved up. So without WFNZ and Taylor Zarsler,
so
I would have never be a media guy.
So both of y'all, small humble beginnings, radio stations, and then putting the grind in, and then look where you just fall into place.
Yeah.
That's dope, man. That's dope.
Yeah,
it's dope.
It's a long journey. It's not It's not the well traveled route
never
everybody
is.
Believes.
And it, like we said before, people want to see the fully baked version, but they don't want to see what it took when you were just in yeast mode. See how I played that? Yeah.
For a dude that don't cook like that, I'm pretty good.
Touché. Nah, I don't bake.
You don't. That was some good right there. Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media manager Peyton Smith. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck. Production manager Sarah Pollock. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. You ain't heard about